Hello and welcome to our ninth Behind the Story podcast. I'm John Higginson, co-founder of Higginson Strategy, a communications agency for purpose-driven organisations. I'm also the founder of Nature 2030, a campaign supporting the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Today's podcast is recorded for the first time via video link between London and Hod HaSharon in Israel. And we're in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm joined today by three guests who I've had the pleasure of working with over the past few years. Sean Sutherland is a serial entrepreneur with a varied background in advertising, Michelin-starred restaurants, film production, and brand creation design agencies. In 2017, Sean co-founded A Plastic Planet, a social impact nonprofit with a single goal to ignite and inspire the world to turn off the plastic tap. Sean is a human whirlwind, and we're very pleased to have her on. Welcome, Sean. David Newman is the Managing Director of the Bio-Based and Biodegradable Industries Association. He's also President of the World Biogas Association. David has been working on bio-waste collection and treatment and the use of biomaterials in improving waste streams since the late 1990s. He's also the source of the title of today's podcast because he's been saying it for years. It's all connected. Welcome, David. And last but not least, joining us from Israel, Daphna Nissenbaum is a co-founder and CEO of Tipa Corporation, a company that creates viable, compostable, flexible packaging. Prior to founding Tipa in 2010, Daphna served as the CEO of the Caesarea, I hope I got that right, Center for Capital Markets and Risk Management at the Interdisciplinary Center. Welcome, Daphna. So I'm going to open today's session with a question. We're all working at the moment in this strange new world. We're in a state that no humans have ever actually been in before, where 3 billion people are currently at home at the moment, and we're all our homes have been turned into schools. My two kids are in a lesson downstairs. My wife has become a teacher. Our homes have become our workspaces. And outside, we're watching these horrific ticker up of deaths every day, and every single one of those deaths is a real human tragedy in this family around there. And I think all of us potentially know people that have got this horrendous sickness, and our hearts go out to all those people that have been affected already. But people at the moment are crying out for good news. Are there any positives to take out of our current situation, or is it crass to even consider it? And if I can open up with David.
Thank you, John. Thanks for inviting me and welcome to this. Of course, there's a lot of really good news. And the first bit of good news is that we have this technology today which enables us to talk to each other. And we are using this as associations to connect to our members all over the world to listen to them. They are using their technologies to talk to their family members wherever they are over the world. This is the first time in human history that we've been able to do that. And it works. Isn't it astonishing? It actually works. So there's one very, very good bit of news. The second good bit of news is that this is a very steep learning curve for humanity. And I know the other guests will speak about this in more detail, but this is a time of really deep reflection. And we see, as you say, everything is connected. We see the consequences of what we have been doing for the last 50, 60 years. And that very, very steep curve, learning curve will bring us to a better place.
Great. Sean, over to you.
Thanks, John. And yeah, David, just to touch on something perhaps a little bit more, a bit closer to home, I think the things for me have been this extraordinary feeling of community. So just as you were saying, it's a time where maybe only 15, 10 years ago, we would have felt much more isolated than we do now. So for me, some of the good things that have come out of this has definitely been this feeling of community in the UK, just the extraordinary response to the call out for volunteers to the NHS. Them asking for 200,000. I think they've now got 800,000 people have volunteered. So I think that's been a really positive part. The smaller part of that is family. The fact that all these families are currently forced to be together, to exercise together, to eat together, to cook together, to actually all be in one space for longer than a couple of hours a night. And I think there's going to be good and bad stories about that. But I think long term, we will be rediscovering why we ended up with the people that we decided to get married to or live with. So I think that's been a really positive thing. And the final bit for me is I think we're learning. We're much more resilient than we thought. And what we dreamt as individuals was just unimaginable for us to be able to cope with. Here we are, we're breathing in and out, most of us, and we're coping every day. And I think that is something that perhaps we never imagined we were quite as resilient. Whether business is going to be quite as resilient, I think the jury's still out, because that's going to be much more difficult for business to recover from this.
Daphne, what's the view from Israel?
Well, of course, I agree. First of all, thank you. It's a pleasure being here today and pleasure to be part of the guests here. Of course, I agree with Sean and David. I think they covered very important points. I would like to add something about, you know, we were wondering for years, how can we live in a better world? And what we see in 2 months, we live in a much better world. Like magic, okay? Like magic happened to the world, the air is clean, the water clean, everything changed like just like that. And we were wondering how to do that. I think this is a very good point to see what happened when we just stopped for a moment.
Yeah. Before our current situation that we're in, and I think those are all really valid, great points there. Those of us that have been in the environmental movement for time and some of you have been in it for longer than me, we found the huge resistance that we've faced to any kind of behaviour change when you try to get even quite small behaviour changes. But over the past few weeks, we've seen how all these people across all these countries have responded in a huge way, in a way that is a bigger behaviour change than perhaps any of us have made before. What lessons can we learn from our reaction and the way that we've changed our behaviour now to how that can be passed on to the environmental movement? Sean?
Well, I'll just jump in with a quickie. The huge lesson for me should definitely apply to the climate crisis as well is trust the science. And whenever you see any of the heads of state globally standing up, delivering messages to their nations, flanked by scientists, every single time deferring to the scientists. And yet here we are with the environmental crisis, and yet the scientists have still been ignored. And so I think if there's any big learning there, it should be, let's take that approach to the environmental crisis as well, of listen to the scientists, trust the scientists, and behave accordingly. At the moment, we only ever listen to the economists. We need to learn.
If I may add to that, it is that leadership is crucial. And, you know, we see this if we're talking about our waste recycling at a municipal level. You know, the mayor or the council is absolutely essential to getting citizens to participate. And if we need 3 billion people to be in their homes every day, leadership and authority and the credibility of leadership is absolutely vital. And where we have seen the biggest mess happen is because we've had weak governments. And this is no offense to our friends in Italy or Spain, where we have seen people ignoring government advice is because they have been ignoring it for the last 50 years and because the politicians have little credibility. So leadership credibility is absolutely essential. And when you have that, people respond.
Thank you. Daphne, were you going to come in on that question? Please do.
Okay. Just a small remark. I think what we see now that when, as humanity, we were pushed to the corner. And immediately we changed the way we live, we changed our habits immediately. We were just pushed to the corner. We were forced to do something, not by law, but by nature. And immediately we did it. Of course, there are exceptions, as David said, but more or less we see the change coming there. So for me, what I can learn from it, if people understand that they need to change in order to have better life, to live better life. You know, they need to change their habits in order to live better life, or save something, or save the world, or save the children. And when they understand it, they just take action. And that's, for me, it's a lesson.
Great. The global shutdown, as you've pointed out there, Daphne, has highlighted the connection between mankind and nature. We don't just sit above nature. We are deeply, deeply connected to it. But in our reaction to it, and in the enforced isolation and lockdown that we've all been put into, we found that wildlife and clear waters have returned to Venice. China's air quality has improved. The country's carbon dioxide emissions have fallen by around 25%. How do we resist the urge to revert to type once COVID-19 is defeated?
I think that I'm sorry to be pessimistic here, but I think that we won't. And I think there will be very, very few cases of countries around the world who will take on board that very, very steep learning curve we talked about before, John. And we will revert to type very, very quickly. We'll keep pumping plastics into the oceans. We'll keep pumping CO2 into the atmosphere, because behind this are huge interests to make sure that we continue to do that. And they are financing governments, politicians around the world to ensure that their business model is maintained. That is not going to change. Sorry.
Yeah. One of the fundamentals for me is that we've always said at A Plastic Planet that if it doesn't work for business, it's not going to work. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, our organization has always been incredibly pro-business, not pro-fossil fuel business, but generally pro-business. And what you can see at the moment is clearly this kind of dramatic clampdown on consumerism, on everything that we're doing, on industry globally, isn't going to work for business, and it's not sustainable. So it's the lessons for us have to be, how do we get where we are, but in a way that works for business? And also doesn't, at the moment, I feel there's still a huge amount of inequality. We are, as people start to look at how we come out of the COVID-19 crisis, there's going to be massive amount of opportunity. But that opportunity will be for the rich, not for the poor. And most people, you know, not the 1%, are not going to benefit in any way from this, other than the fact that the air is cleaner and everything else. But they'll be so desperate to get back to some kind of level of financial security that they will have to abandon their environmental objectives, their personal commitment to that, because they have a much greater need, and that they have to get back into employment. The news today in the UK about the number of small businesses that are going to hit the wall. We can't ignore that right now. So my concern is that much as it would be wonderful to think that we could take this exact approach and mirror it for the climate crisis, it would never work because it doesn't work for business. Mm. And we have to create a model that does work for business, because it's simply, for me, we're going to move from this generation where it's all about buy, throw away, discard, create this extraordinary level of waste. And we already know that we have to move from that into a generation and an economy that is based on quality, that we buy less, but we buy better, that we don't throw away, that we do have a right to repair and all of those things, which mean other industries, other opportunities will spring up. We've had no time to think what those could be. And I hope that perhaps the longer the lockdown goes, the deeper these new habits of not jumping in a car to get to a meeting, jumping on a plane, all of this kind of telecommuting, everything that we're learning as a new normal for us. The longer the shutdown happens, the more likely it is that we will maintain some of those things. But the fundamental of it also has to work for business will never go away.
Great. Well, that brings me nicely into our next question, which is on some of the things that we've been seeing over the past few weeks. In the US, the Environmental Protection Agency has rolled back key regulations on car efficiency standards. We've seen the plastic lobbyists in the US writing to politicians, calling on them to reverse a ban on plastic bags. In the EU, car makers wrote to the European Commission last week to demand a loosening of requirements on them to cut carbon. And then we have industries that are asking for public money to bail them out, the airline industry, cruise ships. How do we make sure that at the present time, environmental commitments aren't weakened using that argument that you say of, oh, it's all about finance, we need to get everything up and running. And should any industries that get bailed out, should there be attachments to them that they have to cut their carbon and if they're to get that money? So tackle either one of those questions, definitely.
I totally agree with Sean that the economic side of things is very important, and that actually drives the world. There's one thing that can, in the way I see it, can change that, and that is that if we connect it to our health. So as long as we continue to show by supporting science or by supporting researchers or by supporting certain activities that show that we actually increase the quality of life and increase the health, etc., while we keep the environmental issues under control or promoting the environmental issues, I think that's very important. So for me, it's kind of education, but it's not only education, it's education and connecting it to our own health, our family's health. As long as we do this, I think that actually wins the economic side of things, not always, but hopefully sometimes. And I think that's the main tool to continuously promote the environmental steps that were already taken and the ones that we have to take.
Can I just chip in just to concur completely with Daphne there, that I agree, we are a very selfish species. And when something impacts our health, I mean, who knew that we could all react the way that we have right now and volunteer to comply with such a massive global lockdown? And it's because it's our own health, the health of our loved ones. It's not the health of the environment. And as a selfish species, if we make things a little bit more evident that it is our health that is going to be impacted through the climate crisis, perhaps that might be one of the levers of change that we can look at. And for ourselves, you know, one of the partnerships that we work very closely with is the Plastic Health Coalition, because we know that just on plastics, if we can link the impact of plastic and the toxicity of the chemicals used to human health, then that's going to be a massive lever of change. So again, much as we should care about ocean pollution, we should care about the turtle with a straw up its nose. We say that we do, and then we carry on regardless. But as soon as something impacts our health, the health of our kids, we will act. So perhaps as environmentalists, we can all learn a little bit from this lesson that link it to health and action will happen faster.
Can I just add to this? You're sitting in JP Morgan in Wall Street, John, and you're trading shares every day. And you're trading shares of the biggest companies in the world, the oil companies. And their market value has declined 60% in the last 3 weeks. The price of oil has gone to $20 a barrel. You don't give a hoot about any of this stuff. Your shareholders don't give a hoot about any of this stuff. Okay? So I'm sorry to be, you know, crudely pessimistic here, but the reality of it is that we are going to have, coming out of this crisis, extraordinarily abundant volumes of fossil fuels, because countries like Saudi Arabia are pumping them out, and Russia depend upon their future by pumping out fossil fuels, not on saving turtles or our health. They don't give a damn about that. And so your shareholders sitting on Wall Street and your people sitting down in Houston and Riyadh or in Tehran are really worried about market share of their fossil fuels. And if they can screw over the renewable energy industry, they will. If they can screw over the compostable plastics industry, they will, because it'll mean them selling more plastics. Okay? How we can control that is by strong governments. And that's why the strong government that we've had in Brussels has been absolutely essential over the last 30 years in getting environmental laws passed through against these people, despite these people fighting every moment of the day against any possible legislation which hinders their business model. But where we have national and weaker governments, and we now in the UK have a national and weaker government, we will be done over by these interests.
Thank you, David, and some positive as well as some quite worrying analysis there. One final question on a lighter note. we've all got, or lots of us have a bit more time on our hands at the moment. Can each of you recommend one book, film, or TV show that our listeners should tune into, read, listen to on Audible over the next few weeks? And I'll start with Sean.
Damn, because I've already got three in my head. I'll do them really quickly. Bill Bryson, The Body. Unbelievable. It's him. He's the travel writer. And he treats the body as his latest journey. It's so amazing because it makes you realize how incredible the human body is. So definitely recommend that. If you want a bit of Hollywood gloss, then watch The Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon and Steve Carell, because it's just perfect escapism, never talks about any kind of pandemic. I think you'd really enjoy that. And then my commitment in this lockdown is that I'm finally going to read Project Drawdown, because it's a big, heavy book, but it has all the science and all the answers in there. And I feel this is the time for me to educate myself on if we're going to try and improve the planet in any way for us humans to be able to still live here, then a lot of the answers are in that document and I need to know more about them.
Great. David.
Well, I'm sure you've all seen this. Maybe you can't
Sapiens.
See it.
Sapiens. Oh, yeah, that's well, very good.
Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari. But I read that many, many months back. But his latest one, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, is really fantastic. It's very, very good. And if you want to understand more about how this happened, this crisis happened, a very really enjoyable, really funny, but also deep dive into probability is The Black Swan. And I'm sure people have heard of now of Nassim Nicholas Taleb and The Black Swan, and how the improbable is likely to happen all the time. Of course, when we live our daily lives, we always think it's going to happen exactly as tomorrow as it did today. But actually, that Black Swan is just around the corner waiting for us. And here it is, we've hit it. Those are two very good fun books.
Right, definitely.
Yes, so I was trying to think about this this question. You know, what do I do with my free time? So with my house full of kids, I have no free time now. Three meals a day, etc., etc. No free time for me. But still, when I wanted to recommend a book or a movie, let's say a movie that we can watch, I think that we've been living the best movie now. That anyone can think of. And when I tried to think about any other movie that I saw in regards to environmental effects, etc., this is the best movie. We're living the best movie. So that's my recommendation. Just look what happens and take our conclusions.
Great.
Yeah, can I add, John, now is the time actually to write.
Yeah, to write.
And I know
not to read,
writing,
but to write. Yeah. No, not me, but you know, now is the time to write.
Yeah, and I'll just add to your one, David. I've read Sapiens and also Homo Deus, which is his second one after that. We actually looked at what way humans were going afterwards by Harari. That's another great one. And as a film, last night I watched again a film that I loved. I found myself going back to films that I loved 20 years ago, because it just brings you back. And Sideways is one of those films. It's full of pathos. It's these kind of sad middle-aged men, and it just makes you feel happy, and you can have a glass of wine. And
yeah, just not the Merlot. It's a great film. Don't touch the Merlot.
do not touch the Merlot, yeah. A great, great film. So yeah, I think we're in a time where we need films that are escapism at the moment, and some great recommendations. Thank you today to all of our guests. It's a really fascinating conversation. See you all soon.
Thank you.